When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
Joe, we are back here in Newport Beach, and I personally cannot believe what's happening, but I told you this before we hit record. Mm-hmm. I had some shocking news to tell you.
Tell me.
I think Julie Cooper might be my favorite actor. Cooper.
Welcome home.
Now let me stress something here. It's only because Jimmy Cooper's not in the picture anymore. Jimmy Cooper will always have my heart as the best Cooper. But dear Lord, yes. Even Caitlin is an equally awful Cooper.
Mm-hmm. That she is.
And she is the titular pot stir of this episode, episode 13 from season 3. The pot stir. Yet another double meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got Caitlin stirring the pot with the relationship triangle of Johnny, Ryan, and Marissa, but also she's becoming a little pot dealer.
Seth, mm-hmm. Kevin. They could have brought the metaphor even more home if she was like cooking things.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe she's making meth. My first big note, I had to mention this, had to give it a shout out. China, the horse with alopecia, gets another reference, mm-hmm. brought back in. Summer describes her as looking like a giant chihuahua, which got a big old laugh from me on the couch. This whole episode at its core is about the Caitlin Marissa Cooper jealousy towards each mm-hmm. other. And like kind of equally makes sense on both fronts. Like, you've got Marissa, who's like, man, every year for Caitlin's birthday party, it was like this huge bash. And then like Caitlin's explaining her birthdays to Johnny, and it involves like hiring Cirque du Soleil to be there and all types of crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Caitlin's whole thing is like, my birthday was the only day that anybody noticed me because my sister was Marissa Cooper, which feels fabricated.
Yeah.
Not sure how to feel about this either way. And actually, because of that, I wrote down this note. And I believe this. I feel like the writers have no clue what character Caitlin is at this point. And no. They're just making her like 10 different character types. Just like scattered around the show.
They've decided that she's a deus ex machina, but they have not decided what kind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While this is all happening, we also have the continuation of Julie Cooper's interest in Summer's dad. And I love this pitch. They're like, she doesn't want to be noticed anywhere. And mm-hmm. Summer's dad's like, listen, I know a terrible burger joint. Like, even the owner doesn't want to be inside that building. We can go there on Sunday night, and I promise no one will find us. And Julie Cooper is so invested in this awful burger date that she completely forgets her daughter's birthday.
Which is very Julie Cooper.
It's very Julie Cooper, but also Caitlin's been forgotten for 2.5 seasons as well. So, like, we, the audience, have also forgotten about Caitlin's birthday since the show began. Marissa also discovers that Johnny and Caitlin have been hanging out, talking, kissing, smooching, whatever. And she's not handling it super well. And I guess the age gap isn't as terrible as I was left to believe in the last episode, given that she literally is turning 15 in a week and Johnny's 17. Like, that's not the... I thought that Johnny was 18, for starters. I thought that she was, like, just turned 14. Like, that's a much more egregious age gap than, like, 2 years and some change. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
There's still a bit of ick about making out with the sister of the girl you're clearly obsessed over.
Yeah, it's just like, it's not great because it's like, I also, like you, thought Johnny was 18. I think this is one of those like retcons in the middle of the writing of the season where they're like, okay, we need to make it not as icky, especially if they're going to be physical. Because up until, like, they need to have the birthday to say she is only 2 years younger than him and he is also still a minor. Instead of doing, like, some rushed expositional thing, they made it an entire plot point just so we can get to them making out and carrying on. It's, yeah, it's weird. But it's also, like, this kind of stuff is, like, soap opera gold, like old soap opera tropes where it's like you can't be with the one sibling, so you're being with the other sibling, but it's still gross. Like it's those things in soap operas.
So what essentially happens in this particular episode, I don't think that this is a particularly good episode. This is like an easy 2-star out of 5-star for me. It doesn't do anything egregious or bad, but it's kind of just like a nothing burger of an episode. Mm-hmm. Like it seems to strictly exist to just tie a bow on a couple things to be able to make the following episode make more sense from the previous episode. But like,
yeah.
Like, as far as big moments, there are none. But as soon as Julie Cooper realizes she forgot about Caitlin's birthday, she cancels her dinner plans. And because she doesn't want to have the party in the trailer park, she convinces Summer's dad to let them use his house. And they throw a big bash. And, like, I hate to say it like this, but Caitlin's being an obnoxious, spoiled bitch this entire time. Like, I feel like Julie Cooper made a somewhat reasonable mistake because her daughter has not been home for 3 years for her birthday and goes above and beyond to like adjust and make up for that. And like, as Ryan points out, Caitlin is solely focused on hurting Marissa at this point more than anything. So she's like going over to visit Ryan just to be like, why do you think Marissa's so angry that I'm friends with Johnny? Like, I can't imagine why that would bother her unless there was like something else happening between the two of them. Don't you agree, sir? Like, she's just kind of like poking and prodding. And it's kind of annoying to watch. To be frank, it's not great. Now, we do introduce a plot line that I think I sent you an article about before we had gotten there in the show. But very, I would say in the last couple months, there was an article going around from some former OC writers that essentially said that they made Seth a pothead in the 3rd season of the show. I vaguely combed through it because we obviously hadn't got to that part of the season yet. So I'm not sure if you read the article. You can definitely clarify points if you had. But I think it was essentially that like Adam Brody was becoming noticeably less invested in the show and the storylines. And this was a way to like kind of cover up the fact that he was phoning it in as far as acting goes at this point. Like, they're like, let's just make the character a big-ass stoner now so that when he's, like, looking glassy-eyed and uninvested in the storylines, it fits the character more. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Given how much I dislike Seth at this point in the show, I feel like this plot line can only be an improvement upon the character, honestly. Yeah. So I have to ask, though, Joe, you as the expert, where do you stand on Stoner Seth?
I hate this plot line so much. I hate this. I hate it in its larger context of the season, yeah. Right? We're in the back nine of this.
It seems like
season.
A real, especially in like 2024, when like everyone and their mom can just go to the store and buy a vape pen. Mm-hmm. The season's almost over. Seth's big hurdle is that he likes pot too much. Seems pretty minor in comparison to everyone else's storylines going on. Seems like a real like speed bump situation at max.
It's not great. It's not great because it's like, you got to look at the whole series up to now, right? Like the different things that are going on, and the two people who they have now put in the most kind of drama and jeopardy are Seth and Sandy. Of, yeah. Like, the Cohen family, right? Seth and Sandy. Ryan's getting, like, no love. Like, yeah. Ryan's just kind of like, I'm studying for the SATs and, you know, getting ready to apply to college.
Yeah.
Or graduate. And Kirsten's just out here, you know, being a matchmaker, being sober, cooking for the family, you know, being proud of Sandy, even though Sandy, hates himself. Like, it's just the two people, which is such a stark difference from the previous season, and then even more stark a difference than season one.
Yeah,
like this whole
Sandy's
situation sucks.
Sandy's plot line is still whatever to me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm nervous that Sandy's going to do something I see fully unforgivable, but mm-hmm. like, as of right now, it's more that the other dude, whose name I completely forgot, but the dude who loves him some strippers, mm-hmm, just mm-hmm. keeps undermining Sandy and doing things, and the things that he's doing are succeeding. But like, it seems obvious that Sandy is still having a lot mm-hmm. of emotions about that. And like, yeah. Kirsten even says, like, I have no doubt that you know when a line is fully being crossed. Right mm-hmm, now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So like right now, I feel like the character of Sandy is like in this similarly to what they did last season. It's like he's in a temptation zone, but I feel like the character of Sandy Cohen doesn't break. I will hate it if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think similarly to like everything with like the, ooh, is Sandy going to cheat? And like the answer was like, he'll get a peck on the lips and that's the end of it. He would never take it to like an unforgivable level in this storyline. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be the same thing here. I think that Sandy is more likely to dissolve the entire group to get rid of this guy than he is to like fully go into the level of being like, can we get some blow for the next investor so that they it's just like, that's not, if they went in that direction, I'd be like, I'm done with this show. They don't know anything about their characters and their moral standings anymore. But
yeah,
the Seth one actually calls in the question if Ryan has actually made his life worse, because if you imagine a world where Ryan isn't in the Cohen's life, right, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. he never shows up, Seth would just go through high school with good grades, fully focused on just, I need to get the hell out of Newport, mm-hmm. and would be going to Brown. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like the introduction of Ryan threw the summer thing in there and gave Seth the, like, I'm a cool guy ego that now he's having issues with, because he's second guessing everything that's happened to him, where it's like, well, yeah, if Ryan never showed up in his life, he would just be fully focused on doing whatever it takes to get out of the OC. So I guess in that way, Ryan's ruined his life.
Well, I got to tell you, Matt, just remember this little postulation about what would have happened if Ryan ever came to Newport.
Yeah.
Maybe that shows up in a future episode.
Oh, dear God. Did they do one of those fantasy alternate reality episodes? Is that how far the OC falls? Dear God.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Let's talk about some music, Joe.
Yeah.
Not a ton of songs in here. We got the Martina Tilapi Bird covering I Only Have Eyes for You. Mm-hmm. When Julie Cooper is on her lunch date.
Mm-hmm.
The Dowel of Groove, Brand New Dolly, plays, it's the club song that plays when Marissa confronts Caitlin and Johnny at her party. And then Electric President's Insomnia plays at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. as everything's happening and Seth is getting stoned in his bedroom. What say you, Joe?
I'm not going to say it was the last song because, you know, that's just, it's such a cop out. It's like, it, you know, if you don't pick any, if you have one song to pick, it's either that or California, right?
By yeah. Planet. Well, and the end song, here's what I'll say, because I also didn't pick the end song, but the end song sounds like the type of song that you imagine being at the end of the OC. Like, it's almost like it's hit the trope level now where it's like, what sounds like an Imogen Heap frou-frou song by a cheaper band?
Yes. Like, what sounds like Brighter Than Sunshine by Aqualung, right?
Yes. Yes.
I chose the song that Johnny and Caitlin are in the club and getting confronted by Marissa.
The Dow of Groove. All right.
Yeah.
I have yet to meet a version of I Only Have Eyes for You that I don't like, so I went with that. It's just a good, pretty song.
I like covers, but I liked how the song was used more, like, against what was happening in the club.
I think that's fair. I think it's a fair complaint, and a fair reason to be into that. And lastly, Joe, let's talk about some pop culture real quick. Mm-hmm. I'll do mine really fast. I can't. Have I talked about The Curse on here?
You have not talked about The Curse. I don't think so. The one with Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder?
Yes. The Curse is a show that I have not fully decided if I like or dislike. Mm-hmm. But I know that I watched the finale a couple months ago now, and I have not stopped thinking about the finale. It is one of the strangest final episodes of any TV show I've ever seen.
What is The Curse about?
So, how familiar are you with Nathan Fielder? Because it's definitely in his wheelhouse of weird.
I used to watch, or I've watched a couple episodes of Nathan For You.
Okay, but you did not watch the rehearsal?
No, but I know that it's like, the rehearsal is supposed to be really strange too.
Yes, and this is similar. So this Nathan Fielder isn't playing himself. Obviously in Nathan For You in the rehearsal, he plays himself. This one, him and Emma Stone play a married couple who are trying to do like a reality show about home flipping and home renovation, but specifically their angle is that they're a white couple that live on native land and they're trying to like basically gentrify the area while also respecting the natives. And
okay, that's already funny.
And on the first episode, they just happen to be in this parking lot, and there's a group of Native girls who are selling like sodas and stuff to make some money. And the producer of the show tells Nathan Fielder, hey, for some footage, go up to one of those kids and give them some money and get like a bunch of drinks from them. It'll be good to like show what a good guy you are.
Sure.
So he goes up and they're filming him. And he opens his wallet, and the only thing he has is a $100 bill in it. And so he gives them the $100 bill, and he takes a couple drinks. And then as soon as he confirms that they're not filming anymore, he goes back and he's like, I need that $100 bill. I absolutely cannot give you that much money for these sodas. I'll go inside. I'll break it into a 20 or something, and I'll give you a much more reasonably priced like amount of money. And the girl yells, I curse you for doing this to me. And suddenly, basically what the show is about at that point is that he and Emma Stone are continually making terrible decisions that are making their lives worse, but he is confident that it's only happening because of this curse that a Native girl put on him, and is trying to right the curse. And it gets darker and weirder as it goes along. And then the ending just turns into like the only word I could use is Kafka-esque. Like it becomes the ending takes such a strange turn and goes into like fantastical, metaphysical. Like, what does this existentially mean? I would be blown away if there's a second season, because it seems like a real finite end to the show. But it's listed as The Curse Season 1 everywhere, so I'm like kind of curious. Like I said, it's not my favorite show of the year, but it's definitely my favorite ending of the year so far. Great final episode that has, like I said, never left my mind. So how about you, Joe? What pop culture thing did you get fully sucked into and interested in?
Matt, I fucking hate you that I have to add another show to my list. Like, I'm so like I'm rewatching Girls 5 Eva right now because I want to get into the new season, and I fucking hate you because now I need to stop that and go watch the show.
Well, the plus with The Curse is that I literally think it's 8 episodes, and I was watching it week to week, so you can just sit down and like cruise through it over a weekend and be done with it. Is Girls 5 Eva your pop culture thing?
No, Girls 5 Eva is not. Even though like I'm rewatching it, and I like it's so weird because like I watched the first season of Girls 5 Eva, like I'm rewatching it now, and it's like I never watched it, because there are things like, I don't remember that. That was really funny.
Well,
and so, yeah.
So let me ask you a question, and this is based on a theory that I've had for a while now. Girls 5 Eva was always a Netflix dropped on everything on one day and you like binge watch it type show, correct?
Girls 5 Eva used to be on Peacock. It was a Peacock original.
And okay, so it did go week to week.
It moved to Netflix, yeah.
Okay.
It was all at once.
Because I was going to say, like, that's something that I've really noticed, and part of why I'm, like, becoming very anti-binge culture is I've noticed that I don't retain the shows that I binge as strongly as I retain the shows that I watch week to week, where I'm, like, thinking about the previous episode for seven days in preparation for the next episode. It's like during those 6 days, I'm really locking in the information of that episode stronger than when I just like sit and knock out a whole season in a day. And then you ask me about it, and I'm like, I don't know. It was good.
Yeah. I'm like, because Girls 5 Eva has so much. Girls 5 Eva has like a lot of really brilliant jokes in it. Like it is it's like Girls 5 Eva is like is one of those Peacock shows like Rutherford Falls, like the reboot of Saved by the Bell, that like is jokes. Like these are writers who understand comedy is jokes and not just situational things. So it's vastly different, it sounds, than The Curse. But anyway, my pop culture thing that I'm really excited about is something that is like, it's a pre-order for a novel. So Joe's talking about a book, first of all.
Woo!
It is a novel by Casey McQuiston, and they are the author of Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Oh, you've talked about this book before.
Which I've talked about that book.
It gave you the tingles.
It gave me it rocked my fucking world. And so this book that's coming out is pre-order it from your local indie bookstore, independent bookstore. Mine, there's one that's near my work. It is a bookstore that specializes only in romance novels.
Okay.
Which is like, it's so beautiful. It's queer owned. It's like everyone in there is so fabulous. It's like you're walking into Portland. But this book is called The Pairing. And I'm just going to read to you the log line that's on the website for the book. In the number one New York Times bestselling author Casey McQuiston's latest romantic comedy, two bisexual exes accidentally book the same European food and wine tour and challenge each other to an international hookup competition to prove they're over each other. And they are over each other, right?
Oh, I'm you've got color me intrigued.
Yeah, there's obviously like a longer synopsis, the book jacket synopsis of it. And it was just like, okay. And it's like, it's bisexual. It's like flirting with non-binariness because like the names are not gendered. So like, and if you look at the cover of the book, it's two figures kissing, but like, they're also not gendered. Like, it's just very, I really hope that this is the novel that is like a spiritual successor to the fame that Casey got with Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Okay. Nice.
So, well, I'm very excited to read this.
That sounds, you got my interest piqued. All right. Well, Joe, hate to leave our audience off on a cliffhanger, but next week's episode is the cliffhanger. So let's find out what happens next in the wacky world of these Newport kids.
Ninety-One Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.